and I will stop at 1. Okay, getting ready to stop. Okay, so a lot of people got lower than they expected. Alright, well, if you have any questions about your grade, you can email me. We'll go over your exam if you want. Maybe I'm in the States grading it. The T's and I graded it together, so there's definitely room for mistakes, so please, if you have any concerns, let me know. And yeah, I think we can dive in. So I want to start by going over the lists again in Scratch. Since this was like a long time ago, and we will have a whole chapter about, and you will have also homework questions about Scratch code with lists. And so I would like to, I'd like you all to understand lists. And so very quickly, adding a number to a list, you can use add or insert. And this is the easiest one is add. And what this code does is it creates a list. And you're going to be able to see it. So this will be your script, and you're going to be able to see on the right side of the on the right panel, you're going to see this list, and the length is 3 because it has 3 elements. And so deleting an element is you can use delete, and what this does is it deletes the first element in the list. So it doesn't delete number 1; it deletes the first item, basically. And so. Before you have the list before there on the left side, and after you delete the first element, you're going to have 2 and 3 left in the list. You have insert is a little smarter because you can add an element at a certain index in the list, so in a certain position in the list. And so if you have this list is the list before you delete, before you insert. And so you say insert 8 at last element in the list. And so what that's going to do, it's going to add 8 at the end of the list. But you can also say insert 9 at 3. And this is going to insert 9 here. And 8 will be the fourth element in the list. After this, like this. You can also replace elements. So here I said replace 3, so item 3, with 100. And so it's going to replace the third item, instead of 9, it's going to become 100. And so you also have the length of the list, which is exactly how many elements are in the list. And so if this is your list, and you tell the sprite to say the length of the list, it's going to say 4, because it has 4 elements. Okay, this is a little trickier. So this is where it gets a little tricky. So this whole code was everything that we did before. We added some elements, we deleted one. This is your list at this point. And so if you want to see, okay, what do I have in the list right now, one option is to look at this list. The other option is to just go over all the elements in the list. And so you need some kind of counter to help you know where exactly you are in the list. And so in the beginning, if you want to take the list from the first element to the fourth element, you set counter to 1. And counter is going to be your, what item are we looking at? And so here you have a repeat until loop, which we talked about before. And you want to go in the list until your counter hits the length of the list plus 1. So you want to stop when you've gone basically over the last all the elements in the list. And so what you do at each step, you say the item counter of list, so that's going to be 1 in the beginning, so you're going to say 2, and then you change counter by 1. And so you add 1 to the counter, and you are going to repeat this until you've gone over all the elements in the list and printed them out. And of course you can try, this is best if you can try writing this in Scratch to see exactly how it works. And so, is this clear? Any questions about this piece of code? Any questions about what does length of list mean, or what does insert mean, or Is that clear? I'm guessing yes. All right. So let's see. So we're going to have some paper questions on that. We had this before. So if you remember, if you have good memory, this is the purpose of this is so you guys understand Lisp. But anyway, so what does this script do? So num is a number of, list of numbers. It's empty before this code is run. And you say when the flag is clicked, you insert 63 at 1 of num. Then you insert 65 at 1 of num. And then you insert 67 at 1 of num. And so remember, insert puts the whatever you're inserting at this position in the list. And everything that was, so whatever was before, whatever was at this at that position after gets moved one lower, one, I guess, further away in the list. And then you say length of num for 2 seconds. So what is this going to, what will the sprite say at the end of the script? And your options are A, it's going to say 63, 65, and 67. B, it's going to say length of num. C, it's going to say 3. D, it's going to say 63, 65, 67, and 3. And E, it's going to say 0. Whole script was run, then we added 3 elements, and so there's going to be 3 elements in the list. The next question is, okay, so, okay, the same thing, when the flag is clicked, you insert a 63 at 1, insert 65 at 1, insert a 67 at 1, then you set this X to 1 of different variable, and you repeat until x is equal to the length of num plus 1. And what you repeat inside the loop are 2 things. One is say item x of num for 2 seconds. The second thing is change x by 1. And what will the sprite say is the question. And your options are A, 63, 65, 67. B, it will say item x of num 3 times. So exactly this text. C, 63, B67, 65, 63, E67. So you are going to stay in this loop. Remember the nag loop? You're going to stay in this loop until this condition is met. So when X is equal to the length of the list plus 1, so whatever the length of the list plus 1 is, you're going to stop. But as long as it's different, you're going to keep staying in the loop. Different from, so, different from length of num plus 1. Right? Because that's your condition. Any other questions? Did I start it? Stop at 15 after 2, 2:15. Okay, stop it. Wow, okay. People need more time? Okay. Majority answer is D. Very undecided. All right. Let's see. So another popular answer was A, and I think A makes a lot of sense because if you think naturally, so you first inserted 63, then you inserted 65, then you inserted 67, but because of the way insert it works, after this statement is run, you're going to have 63 at the first element, but then when you add 65 at 1, 63 becomes the second element in the list. And 65 becomes the first one. When you do this, 67 becomes the first one. The one that was the first one, which was 65, becomes the second one. And the one that was the second one becomes the third one, which was 63. And so you're going to have 67 as the first element. 65 is going to be the second element. And 63 is going to be the third element. And this, anybody answered, who answered these, one of these two? Wants to explain why you thought it was, that was the answer? No. Okay. So the key is this repeat until loop. Because x starts when it's 1, so it's 1 in the beginning. Length of num plus 1, what is that? How much is length of num plus 1? 4. So and so is x equal to 4? Is 1 equal to 4? It's not. So you have to go in the loop and increase x until it becomes 4. And when it becomes 4, you stop it. And that's why you have three things that happen. Any questions? Okay, next question. So you're given a list. This is the list that you're working with, which is 25, 23, 10, 56, 7, and 10, again. And the code is when the flag is clicked, you set x to 1. You repeat until x is equal to length of num plus 1. And what you repeat are two things, and actually three things, what I forgot. If item x of num equals 10, you would play the sound meow until done. And here, add change x by 1. Okay? Because otherwise, this is never going to stop. So what is length of num plus 1 here? So we have length of length of num is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Plus 1 is 7. Okay? And so here, just add change x by 1. And how many times is this going to meow? How many times is the meow sound going to happen? And your options are A, 2, B, 10, C, 1, D, none, E, an infinite number of times. Stop at 2. None would be if, okay, I'm just going to go over and explain what this code does. So we start by, with this list, x is 1, we repeat until x is equal to 7, which it's not, so it's going into this loop. It says if item x of num is 10, so x is 1, is item x of num 10, it's not. It makes x 2, it repeats, it goes into this loop again. Item 2 of list is 10. Yeah, go ahead. Yes, that I said that you need to change. You need to insert here a change x by 1. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah, that was a choice. what would be...
Is that like the length of them, not like what actually is in the spots? So, 6 until it reaches 7?
Can you say that again?
Like, I guess like the way I understood it was like when it says length of them, like you would say it was 6. Because like there's 6 items in the list.
Right.
So like why are you considering what's actually in the spots?
Okay, because of this, item X of none.
Okay.
And so what it does, it just goes over the list, and when X becomes 3, it says item 3 of num is actually 10, and so it meows once, and then it goes over the next element and so on. It gets to 6, the 6th element, it's 10 again, it's going to meow the second time. Okay? So whenever there's an element that's 10, it's going to meow once for each element of the list that is equal to 10. Questions? Another question. So the evaluation trees are just as the expression trees, but you have values here. And so what you do is you treat them like an expression tree, but you can actually figure out what the value is of this tree. Okay? And so the question is, what is the value of this tree? And the tree, there's an OR on top, left branch, and there's a not with a false, and on the right branch, there's a true. And options are A, true, B, false, C, blue. And stop at 1. Because what this tree is it goes bottom up and it does a not false first, which is true, and then it does true or true, which is
true.
And so that's okay. Next question. I know you've seen this a lot, but it was on the midterm and it will be on the homework. There's going to be homework 3, and it's also going to be on the final. And so I'm hoping that everybody will do really well. And so what the question is, after all these instructions are going to be executed, what will be in the accumulator? And so your little machine language code is accumulator equals A, N equals not accumulator, accumulator equals B, accumulator equals accumulator and N, N equals accumulator, accumulator equals C, accumulator equals accumulator or N. And your options are A, C, B, paren, not A, and B, close paren, or C, C, not A, or B, or C, D, C, or paren, A and B, close paren, E, A and B. Stop at 2:30. getting ready to stop. Stopping. Okay, B. Good. Okay. I think that was it. Okay, so the last time we had lecture, we talked about subroutines, and we talked about writing the lyrics of songs with using subroutines. And so we're going to talk about subroutines in general, but applying it to writing the lyrics of songs, because, you know, those are easier to see than other things. And so just a subroutine, again, is just a piece of code, which can be more or less independent, that accomplishes a certain task. And so we've seen this a lot, the subroutine that draws a square. And we define it by saying when I receive the name of the subroutine and what needs to happen, what that subroutine does. And so, again, we looked at songs, and we said that if we wanted to write the lyrics for Clementine, we could just write, say, each line. Or we can notice that, actually, which is this, so just write out every single, or, you know, if you had a sound for each line of the song, you could just play that sound, and that's how you make the song. Or you could notice that there are certain words that repeat, and in this case, it's the chorus of the song that repeats. And so you could just write a subroutine instead of typing out or, you know, clicking and dragging blocks for, you know, every single time you play the chorus. You could just write the subroutine chorus, which sings the chorus, and then you, in the main song, you just write out the verses, and then you broadcast the chorus whenever you need it. And that makes the song much smaller. And so we saw this too, and we said that there are, you know, we could define the subroutine. This part repeats, but there's also, and we call it close, but there's also, we can notice that there's also this part, which is, it's separated from the chorus in this case, but in here it's nested in the chorus. And so basically the chorus, if we define the subroutine to be this piece of code, then we have it separately here, but we have it inside the chorus in here. And so we saw that subroutines can call other subroutines. And this is a song to show that. So when we play the chorus, we have, so this is the chorus, or the close part. We play the sound that is the blue part, and then we just broadcast the lighter part, or yellow, whatever it is. All right, and this is an interesting song because it has parts that repeat. So it has the mu part, and it has, which repeats basically every single verse. And every time we add an animal, we're gonna play the animal, the new animal, and then we're gonna play all the old animals. So one option to do this would be to write, you know, a moo subroutine, which would be the blue one, and then we can call it here and here and here and here. We could have a red one, which is this one, which makes a pig sound and a horse sound and so on. But we could also notice that whenever we snort here, that this is always followed by a moo. And so the purpose of this is to write as little as possible. So that's what we want to do. If we didn't care about how much we wrote, we could just write a subroutine for each. But if we notice that every time we have the red part, we also have the blue part, then we can include the blue part in the subroutine for playing the sound for the pig. And also whenever we neigh, we also snort and moo, because whenever we snort, we moo. And so, noticing that, the high level, so our script, what it's going to look like, it's going to be just this. This is all the song. And so when we're going to click the flag, The first verse is going to be about the cow, the second verse is going to be about the pig, the third verse is going to be about the horse, and the fourth verse is going to be about the chick. And so what happens here, this is just the cow, this is the simplest. We play the verse, and then we broadcast the moo. And what the moo does, it just plays the moo-moo here, whatever part. But what's interesting is that the pig, so the pig also plays a verse, and then it, you know, it broadcasts pig, and pig plays the snort sound, and then it plays the moo sound. So whenever we're going to broadcast pig, there's going to be a snort and then moo. And the same for the horse. Whenever it neighs, it also broadcasts a pig, which is going to snort and moo. And so on. And so, so far we've only used them to write smaller. So we only use subroutines to detect what parts of texts are repeated, and kind of put them together. And we also saw that us subroutines can call other subroutines. But what if you have something like this? This is another interesting Beatles song, which is all the three verses. The first three verses are exactly the same, except for one word. So this would be very easy to write if we had, if this word was the same in all the verses. And so one option would be to just write separate parts for, so write a part for this and then write it separately. But an easier one would be to just maybe make a list with all these words. We're going to put waiting, hoping, and coming in a list. And then for each verse, we're going to grab something from the list. And we're going to kind of put it in the song. And so this is our list that we can make in Scratch. And it has the three. So the word for the first verse is item one of words, which is waiting. And the word for the second verse is the item two of words, which is hoping. And the word for the third verse is the third element of words. And so our verse becomes, writing the part that repeats four times, there's a line that repeats four times. Then the magical mystery tour is, and then we say item I of words. And I will be one for the first verse, two for the second verse, three for the third verse, and so on. And so this is our song. And so our main song will be setting I to one. I will be our item in the list. And then we broadcast the verse. And if you notice that the verse says item I of words. And so when I is one, it's going to take a waiting from this list. And it will sing the whole song with waiting. And then we change I by one, and we broadcast the verse again. I is going to be two. It's going to take the second item in the list, and so on. And this last part that, you know, it was a little different than the other parts. Can you make an improvement to this code? Is there something that you think you can do better or write less? What can you do to write less than this? Can you write less than this? Is there some repeated part, maybe?
Sure, you could pull out the second and third broadcast of change instead of just put it in a loop so that it changes it every time.
Right. So this part, I wrote this three times, and so we can make a repeat three and also increase I by one. And so the more efficient way to write this would be, you know, set I to one and then repeat three times, broadcast the verse, and then we have to change I by one too. And if this is the same, I think this is a little clearer, but this is more concentrated and compact. And so another thing that we can throw, so what we saw is that, we've seen is that the verses can have parameters. And so we can use a list to, use different words for different verses. And so we also saw that some subroutines can call other subroutines. And what if a subroutine would call itself? If a subroutine calls itself, that's called recursion. We talked about recursion a little bit before. And we're going to see how that works with songs. And so a recursive song would be the 99 Bottles of Beer song, which is just as the Magical Mystery Tour. It's all the verses are exactly the same, except for the number of bottles that are sung about. And so the first verse is about 99, the second verse is about 98, and so on, and it goes on and on until, you know, you get bored or you fall asleep. Or you reach, I don't know, does it go to minus one and minus two? I guess it stops at zero. Okay. And so, how would we write the song? So we would say, we have our subroutine here. We stop. Okay, so this one is going to stop when the bottle is bottles is equal to zero. It's not going to go to minus one because we want to stop the song at some point. And so we decided that we're going to stop at zero, and then we are going to say bottles. It starts by being 99. We set it to be 99 at the beginning, and then we just broadcast the song. Okay. What the song is going to do, it's going to sing, say, bottle, so 99 in the beginning, bottles of beer on the wall, da-da-da, and then change bottles by minus one. You say, because there's one of them happens to fall, 98 bottles of beer on the wall, so it's bottles minus one, and then you broadcast yourself, so you broadcast the same subroutine. And so this is called recursion because, you know, subroutine calls itself, and what's gonna happen is going to be, so now bottles is 98, and so it's gonna say 98, and so on. Here it's gonna become 97. It's gonna go on and on and on. It's gonna stop when bottles is zero because here it says if bottles is bigger than zero. So if it's not bigger than zero, it's not gonna go into this if. It's gonna stop, and that's the whole song. Okay, so we've seen recursion apply to songs. And a lot of people think that recursion is very tricky and complicated, but it's very, it happens a lot in nature and toys and so on. So I don't know if you've ever, has anybody seen this before? So there's a little doll. They're wooden, I think, and they open up, and you open up, and in the big one, there's the second smaller one, and you have the third one and the fourth one and so on. And so there's little dolls inside, and you stop at some point when, you know, it becomes too hard to cut wood, I guess. There's also some, you know, broccoli or cauliflower, which are, you know, cauliflower, it has, I guess, a thicker part, and then there's a whole bunch of smaller cauliflowers. And each small cauliflower is like, you know, a thicker part and then a larger cauliflower. And it stops at a, you know, after a few times of that. Okay. So that's, we have recursive vegetables. And so, this is one thing in recursion that I said before, but that I'm going to say again because it's a very important part of recursion, is you need to stop at some point. If you don't stop at some point, you're going to end up seeing something infinitely. And so this is one example. I was very tempted to play this song, but I'm not going to because it got stuck in my head too many times, and I don't want that to happen again. And I have a recording where the voice is extremely annoying, and so I'm going to spare you that too. But what it is when you click the sprite or whatever, we see the song, you play one verse, and then you broadcast the song again. And what this verse does is it just plays this part. But it never says, okay, if I'm bored or if my head explodes or stop, you know, it doesn't say that ever. And so this is going to go on and on and on infinitely. And so we don't want that. And again, notice in the 99 Bottles of Beer song, there was a condition if bottles is bigger than zero. If we didn't have that condition, this would never end. And so that's pretty important. Okay, and so, yeah. Now you're going to go into a more, I guess, abstract part of the class for a little bit. We're going to go back to this part again. This part is kind of about the more philosophical aspects of computer science. And a lot of philosophers love to, you know, kind of ask computer science questions, to put it in a very gentle way. And so they always have a problem with, okay, what is, you know, intelligence and how you know something and what do computers do. And, you know, as a computer scientist, you know, as a scientist, it's kind of like we like precise and mathematical and very, you know, formal things. And it's kind of, they're trying to get this, I don't know, uncertainty and doubt into science. Well, some people actually say that fields that need a science after them are, because people are very insecure about the fact that it's an actual science, and then they need to put the science there to be sure that it's a science, but I think that computer science is definitely a science. Anyway, and so they ask, these are some questions that the scientists ask, the philosophers. So what does it mean to know something? What does intelligence mean? So we, you know, I do artificial intelligence. You know, what does it mean that a machine is intelligent? And then you get stuff like, you know, the Matrix, like that movie, right? Where, you know, computers are going to be smart and they're going to be take over the world. They're going to be given a lot of control. And, you know, what happens in that case? Well, you know, just to let you know, that's not even, there's no danger of that happening in the near future. Right now, they don't even have the intelligence of a mouse. So they haven't been able to figure out the brain of a mouse yet. And so I think there's not a chance to for that to happen. Yes.
But you never know in 15 years.
You know, I would probably say 30, maybe. Yeah. I guess, yeah. Maybe with a lot of, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. There's two kinds of computer scientists. Some computer scientists that think that, you know, computers are going to be just as intelligent as human beings, which means if I'm a person and I sit and I am with somebody that I don't know, am I able to figure out that it's a computer, or am I not able to figure out that it's a computer? So if I'm IMing and I'm saying, you know, we've talked for like an hour or so, and I'm saying, I don't know if this is an actual person or not. I'm not sure it's not a person. Then if at the other end, there's a computer, that computer is considered intelligent. That's called the Turing test. And so that is so far away from happening. You know, like, they made intelligent robots. They think they're intelligent. And you can totally tell that they're just a machine. And you can chat with them, actually. You can find them online. But they do stuff like they take random sentences out of a random file. So you know how people are kind of random? So, you know, you talk to them and they're like, oh, I just got a package from my mom. Or, you know, they just say something that's completely out of context. So they try to simulate that, but it hasn't worked very well. So you can totally tell that it's a computer. So I don't think that they're going to make computers that are just as smart as people, but you never know what they're going to figure out. And so, yeah, so the philosophers ask all these questions. And, you know, they say stuff like, you know, what is the difference between the way people think and the way computers think? So people have this self-consciousness about, they know, they reason about their reasoning. They reason about, you know, and computers don't. Computers just compute stuff. And so computers are not really thinking about themselves. You know, they're not thinking about, oh, let me analyze, how did I compute this? They're very, I don't know, have you ever watched Star Trek Data? I don't know. I watched a whole series when Data was asking all these questions, like how, you know, he's trying to be funny and he couldn't do it, and yeah, so. All right, moving on. And so they end up asking the question, what can't computers do? So what is it that computers can't do? And, you know, philosophers say all kinds of things like, you know, no one gets wet from a computer simulation of a hurricane. Okay, so there's a difference between a simulation, a computer simulation, and the real thing. And there's always going to be, I think. Then they also say that, you know, computers are horrible at translating languages. And I think they got kind of better. Like, has anybody used Google Translate? Okay, so you go on a webpage, you know, you search for something, and you get a webpage in a language that you don't know. For example, I can't speak Chinese. And so I have Chinese friends who have Chinese blogs, and so I want to translate their blogs to keep up with what they're doing. And I can kind of understand if they don't use a lot of idioms, and if they don't, in Chinese they use a lot of idioms, so that's hard. But if there's a language with not a lot of idioms, it's pretty good at translating. They got pretty good at translating languages. It would be great if they could figure out idioms too. That'd be nice. And so this is what I said before. They can't. Computers can't really be self-reflective and self-conscious. And so then you got the idea of power. And what does it mean? So, you know, computer scientists talk a lot about power. What computers have a lot of power. What does that mean? And so here's an example. What power means is something's more powerful than something else if the more powerful thing can simulate the more non-powerful thing. So this is Mario, and this is, I don't know what it's called exactly, but yeah, there you go, Nintendo. And so say I wanted to play Mario, and I don't have the Nintendo. So I need a Nintendo to play Mario. Vestopia, by the way, that's it as well. Okay, I don't have that, but there is a computer, a PC computer program to simulate Nestopia. And so you can get that on the internet, or you can buy it, I guess. And so I could play Mario on my on a PC if I had a PC. But say I don't have a PC, I have a Mac. And so there is a program that runs on a Mac that can simulate, it's called iEmulator, which can simulate a PC. And so, you know, I can, it's called a virtual machine. So I can, you know, I install it and it runs, it's like a PC that runs on a Mac. And so I can do that, and then I can install on the PC that runs on a Mac. I can install my software that simulates Nestopia, and then I can play my Mario game. Okay, so I don't think people even think about this. Like, this is crazy, I think, that you can just simulate computers on other computers. Or, yeah. Yeah, you probably could. Yeah, that's probably true. But I'm just saying, what I'm saying is not like, you know, you can get illegal software. It's just that you can get software that does it. And I'm sure you can pay for it. But it's possible to do these simulations. And it's a copyright violation. All right. I'm definitely not encouraging that. But anyway, this is the idea of power. Okay, I had another slide which was very complicated, and then I just decided to get rid of it and just show you this because I think this is what most people can understand. And so what is this saying? This is not saying that a Mac is more powerful than a PC. You can have it the other way too. And so they're both just as powerful. But I think that PC is definitely more powerful than a PC. So whatever, there's stuff that a PC can do that Nestopia cannot do. But anything that Nestopia can do, a PC can do. And so that's the idea of, you know, this device is more powerful than the other device. Okay. And now another really cool field in computer science is randomness. And so, you know, computer scientists need randomness for all kinds of applications. One is, for example, if you want to play cards with a computer, it needs to generate randomly, you know, a stack of cards to shuffle or whatever. And so that's obviously not the only, you need randomness in all kinds of applications because the world is, you know, you can say that the world is kind of random in that we don't understand exactly, you know, why does, you know, rain happen now and not, you know, next. Like, you know, the world is unpredictable. And so for us, we just simplify that and we say that it's random. And so we need to have a way to simulate that if we want to simulate the world. And so so computers are very, you know, you've seen it. You get bits, you have gates, it's, you know, stuff comes in, you know, we know exactly what comes out, we can determine, it's very deterministic, it's very predictable. How can we take something that's very predictable and generate something that's unpredictable? Okay, and that's very important. And so there's a lot of research going on in computer science about how to make this randomness happen. And so how would you make, if you needed a random number, if you went to an ice cream place and there's six ice creams that you wanted to get, how would you wanted to flip a coin? Well, you can't just flip a coin, right, because there's six things. How would you decide, let's say eight things, okay? And you really don't, They're all very good, and you can't decide what it is. You decide to randomly choose one. How would you do it? Yeah.
Well, to do it physically, there's a lot of things you can do. You can draw straws, or you can roll an eight-sided dice.
Okay. What if you had just coin? A coin.
If you just had a coin, then you could flip it one. You could flip it four times.
You could flip
three
it.
Times,
yes.
Rather, and you could turn it into a binary number.
Exactly. So eight is for I know. Lame. Anyway, so I shouldn't say this in front of class, but I actually did it because I can't decide what ice cream I want. And so Okay, and so that's how my husband learned binary. You want to decide a number, get a number between 1 and 8. And so you need 3 bits for that, right? It's a 3, so 0 is 000, 7 is 111. And so you can just flip a coin. For each bit, you're going to know if it's a head or a tail. All right. Okay, so I guess we kind of talked about this. So what you want to do is you want to get a random number between 0 and 3. And I guess we talked about 0 and 8, between 0 and 8. But let's just stick to this. So we talked about this. This you do by, so you want... You want to generate a random number between 0 and 3, and you want them all to have the same probability. So how does the coin work for this example? Okay, so if you have how many coin flips do you need? 2, right. Okay, and so you have, what's the probability for each number to happen? So if you have 2 coin flips, you're going to say that, you know, heads is 0, tails is 1, and so you're going to flip it twice. What's the probability of each? And then you're going to turn that binary number into a decimal number. What is the probability for each of the numbers between 0 and 3 to happen? 1 to 4, right? They have equal probabilities. What about 0 to 15? How would you do that? With equal probabilities. Yeah, you flip the coin 4 times, you get 4 bits, and they all have what probability?
16.
1 over 16. Okay. What about 0 to 2? So you want to get a number, 0 or 1 or 2, and you want to only, you can only use a coin, a fair coin. And you want to get equal probabilities for 0 and 1 and 2. How would you do it? There's only 3 ice creams, and you can't work me there. Swallow them. Somebody else? Yeah. Okay, do 3 flips and see what comes up twice. I'm not. Does that equal probability? What's the probability of... Yeah, I guess it is, right? Right, that's true. Because why do they have equal probability? So, you said 3 coin flips? Okay. You only need 2, though, right? Okay, so you do 3 coin flips. And what do you do with the 3 coin flips? I know what you mean. You're right. It's just that we need to use a coin.
Physically flip, I guess, 2.
You physically flip twice. So you physically flip twice. Let's say you get... Okay, so the code for 000... 0141 and 1040. What do you do if there's 11? If you get 11. Because you don't have a number, right? Okay, let's just throw in ideas about how we would get equal probabilities for 0. No, well, just how would we choose randomly between 0, 1, or 2? flip a coin? Yeah. You have to flip a coin, yeah. Yeah.
You do two coin flips three times, and if the two are not equal, then it's one. If it's heads, tail, if it's heads, heads, it's... Yeah,
okay.
If it's heads, heads, it's two. If it's tails, tails, it's zero. And if it's not equal, it's one.
So, okay. Wait. What's that? No, I'm just saying. So you said you flip two coins three times.
Right.
So you get three pairs of two bits. Okay, and then...
Okay, if it's heads, heads, it's zero.
If it's heads, heads, here.
If it's not equal, it's one.
Okay, so heads, tails...
Four tails.
Oh, here, right?
Yeah. If it's not equal, it's one.
So wait, if this is heads, heads, you just discard all the other ones? You don't look at this?
Right.
Okay. Okay, never mind. Okay, if it's heads, heads, if it's heads, heads, you have a problem. That's when you have a problem, right? Because if you got anything else... Okay, sorry, go ahead. Heads, heads is zero. Tail, heads is one. Heads, tails is one.
Well, you don't have to flip them three times. Those are just the three options.
Okay, right. Cool. Okay. And if it's tails... So, I'm going to say like this. It's one, and if you get tails, tails, it's two. Okay. What is the probability of this? This is a quarter. This is a quarter, and this is... So one is double probability. Yeah?
Maybe I can explain mine a little bit better.
Sure.
Using one coin, you flip it three times. Heads is zero, tails is one on the first one, and then for the second one, it's, you know, between zero and two. Heads is zero, tails is two. And the third one, heads is one, tails is two.
So okay.
Three flips, but everybody, each one of those is an even.
Okay, so you flip one coin. You flip one coin three times.
Same
that would work. Okay, so you flip. Okay, so then what happens?
I'm thinking of like, if it's like 0 versus 1 versus 2, that would be fair. 0 would have to fight 1 to see who wins.
Okay.
Scissors, 1 would have to face 2, and 0 would have to face 2. And whoever won 2 of those would be.
Right.
I don't know.
So let's just describe you so that everybody, like, and except, like, including me, gets it. Okay, so again. So you flip a coin, one coin three times.
Yeah.
Then what?
Then you have whichever one was true twice.
Okay, so you have one of them was true twice. Okay? So if that was one, so if it's 0, 0, 1, you got a 0. Right? Okay. Alright, if it was a 1, 1, you got a 1. Let's say this was the case. Then what? Oh, and then you have... Okay. You probably do the same thing again. So how is this 0 beats 1 or 1 beats 2? Like, what are you... How... Is that your first... You said something about the first bit, though. Didn't you say something about the first bit? So you said that if this is a 0, then the first... Because you have a 2-bit number. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Basically what he's saying is you flip three times and discard if you get all the same, and then whichever one is the odd one out is which one you pick, right? So you flip it, if you get heads, tails, tails, then the first one is different, or if you get tails, heads, heads, then the first one is different, that's one.
Okay.
But if you get tails, heads, tails, then the second one is the different one.
Oh, I see.
And you would just discard anything that gave you a 0, 0, 0 or a 1, 1, 1.
Okay. And that gives you equal probabilities.
What if it's like heads, heads, tails?
So what if it's heads, heads, tails, that
then
is...
the third one would be different. That would be the one. Okay, the third one.
That would be number three. That's not an option.
That's number two, because you have 0, 2, 1, 2. Yeah, you basically have three numbers. Okay, that makes sense. Was that what you meant? Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's a good. So what I think was the joint, genius way of doing this was you flip 1.3 times, and you're gonna get either all of them are gonna be the same, or there's going to be two of, heads and one of tail, or two of tail and one of heads, right? So there's going to be, if they're all the same, you discard. So if you get a heads, or 0, 0, 0, you just discard it, you flip again. If you get, tails, and heads, so whichever one is different, you consider that to be if this is the different one, if the first one is a different one, it's going to be a 0. If this was the different one, if it was heads, tails, heads, so this was the one that was different, you consider it a 1. And if this was one that was the one that was different, you consider it a 2. And those all have the same probability. Okay, this works. Good job. All right. So this is how you do it in Scratch. You have a Scratch. In Scratch, you can say pick random 0 to 1, and that's going to pick a random number between 0 and 1, which is 0 or 1. And you can do that with anything else. But we're going to use the pick random 0 to 1, and we're going to that's going to be our heads or tails. If it's 0, it's going to be heads. If it's 1, it's going to be tails. And so how do we generate a number between 0 and 3? This is random 4. So we have 4 numbers, and we want to find. So this is going to be 0 or 1 or 2 or 3. And so what we do, random bit is just generating a random bit randomly between 0 and 1. And so we broadcast random bit. This is going to set bit to a random bit. And then we save it. We say the bit 1 will be bit whatever bit was. We call random bit again, generates another random bit. We say that bit 2 is that bit. And then what we're going to do is, this is converting between binary and decimal. And so we're going to be, bit 2 is going to be the first digit of the number. Bit 1 is going to be the second digit of the number. And so we're going to turn this into a decimal number. And I think this is a little easier to see with random 16, because you just generate, so you set a bit 1 to a random bit, bit 2 to a random bit, bit 3, bit 4, so you have 4 random bits, and then you set answer to 8 times bit 2 to the third. If you remember the table, it was 1, 2, 4, 8. And so 8 times the digit most to the left, 4 plus 4 times bit 3, which is the second digit, plus 2 times bit 2 plus bit 1. And this is all, this is the one with 0, 1, all. And what this says is if you, this algorithm was you flip two coins, and if your answer is, so you have 0, 1, and 2. If your answer is 3, you're going to flip again. And you're going to continue flipping until your answer is something that's different. And those also have equal probability. So what you do is you repeat until answer is smaller than 3, and you do the random bits, and you see what your number is. And if your number is 3, you're gonna flip again at 2 points. And so, just to show you, this is the script for. They're all in here, but you can't see them because they're too big. But basically, when I click the sprite, when sprite is clicked, then it will do random 16. So it will generate a number between 0 and 15. And so I'm going to click on it, and it's saying 5, I think. I'm going to click again. I wish you could see this. it doesn't work as... The resolution of that screen is too.
Like at the top right corner, there's like a slideshow icon. Top right.
Top right. Here?
No.
Oh, right.
Oh.
So thought, thank you. Okay, great. So when he said five. And so bit one was, bit three was one, bit four was zero, bit three was one, bit two was zero, and bit one was one. And so the binary number is 101. And so that's why your answer is five, because 101 in decimal is five. Let's try again. It says 11, and it's 11 because bit 1 is 1, bit 4 is 1, so 1, 0, 1, 1. So 1, 0, 1, 1, if you convert that to decimal, it's going to be 11. And that's how you make the next one is 5 again. That's weird. And so here are some basic probability rules that you're going to use in your some of your homework, some of your next homework. So if one event has a probability p, which can be 1 over 4 or 1 over 2, there you need to do 1 over p tries before the event happens. So for example, if you have a coin and you want to see how many times you need to flip the coin on average before you get heads. Okay, so suppose you have 1 million coin flips on average. How many times do you need to flip your coin to get heads, for example? So the probability is 1 over 2. 1 over p will be 1 over 1 over 2, which is 2. And so that's how many tries you need. If you have a dice and you want to know how many times you have to, on average, how many times you have to roll the dice before you get 3. What's the probability of getting 3 if it's a fair dice? How many possibilities do you have for the dice? 6. So what's the probability of 3? 1 over 6. Okay, and so how many times you need to roll the dice before you get 3? 6 times. Okay. This is the second thing. If n distinct events are equally likely, you need approximately n log n. This is a function that you have on your calculator. N log n tries before you see n of them happening. And so if you have a dice and you have your events are, getting 1, getting 2, getting 3, getting 4, getting 5, getting 6, then you need approximately n log n tries, so that's 6 log of 6, before, which log of 6 is approximately, well, it depends which log, but if it's, let's just say it's 1. So you need approximately 6 times before you see all events happen. So if they all have the same probability. If you want to see them in order, you need to roll the dice 6 squared times. So if you want to see 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then and so on, you need to roll it how many times if it's a dice? 36 times, because you have 6 events. And this is what log means. Log is, if you have a number n, how many times can you cut it in half before you reach 1? And that's the log of a number. So for example, the log of 5, you can 5 divided by 2 is 2, so you divide it once. 2 divided by 2 is 1, you divide it twice. So log of 5 is approximately 2. And again, there's a whole theory about logs. There's a base for logs. So this is, just remember this. You have to divide it in half. How many times can you divide that number in half? And so there are a lot of, so we started talking about randomness, right? How can we make computers who are totally deterministic, give us random answers? And so there are a lot of computer, computer programs, basically, that kind of, they don't generate random numbers, but they generate pseudo random numbers. So the numbers that they show are so, look so random. They're not random, they're generated according to some kind of algorithm, and this is one of them. And it's a very, very good algorithm because sometimes random number generators repeat the numbers, and so that's really, that can be really bad. And so this needs 2 to the 19,000th power, well, 20,000th power. That's how many numbers it could generate before it repeats itself. So it's really good. And there's all kinds of statistical tests for randomness that it stands, that it, you know, it passes and stuff like that. And so it's used for generating 32-bit numbers. And so if you have a 32-bit processor and your processor deals with 32-bit numbers, this is usually what the random number generator that they use. And so what these random generators usually do, so people who write random number generators, they usually have come up with a function, and they feed it some kind of number, and then there's a whole sequence of numbers that comes out of that. And so these numbers look random. They're not totally random. Yeah.
Doesn't that create a problem where, it won't repeat itself? Because if it was truly random, occasionally it would repeat itself.
Right. I'm saying this is a period. And so there can be a number that repeats itself, but it's not a cycle. So, you know, you can have two, but then what comes afterwards is not exactly the same as what just happened. So it's talking about a cycle. Yeah. And so this is a little recap of what we've done. And we're gonna start talking about, and you know, continue next time talking about how to do things, how to write computer programs. Every computer program solves a problem, and how do we go about solving problems? And I'm just going to talk briefly about the problem that we're gonna use. And this is a sorting socks problem. So you're doing your laundry, and you have a bag of socks, and you want to sort your pair up your socks. And I guess we're going to start next time talking about that, because everybody's on their way out.